With that, members, we will call the meeting to order. Thank you for your attendance to today's meeting. Members, as you come and go, the committee administrator, or legislative assistant, will note the roll. We do have in our packets the minutes of the March 19th meeting. If you take a moment to just make sure the attendance is correct, the motions are correct. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Representative Benson moves the minutes. Discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. First bill on the agenda for today is House File 2736. Representative Swede. Representative Swedzinski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Thanks
for not coming here a lot of times this year, so the chair doesn't have to get his tongue tangled up pronouncing your name. But
that's okay. That's okay.
We have to have someone move the bill and to get it in front of us. Members,
Mr. Chair,
once. Representative Vogel.
Out of respect for my roommate, I'll move the bill.
To the general register is where it's going to go.
To the general register.
Thank you for the motion. The bill is in front of us. Representative Swedzinski, I understand you have an amendment that
yes.
is being copied. Is it available to us yet?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe it's been, handed out. It is the A2 amendment.
Members, the A2 amendment, do we all have it in front of us?
Yeah, that amendment simply it puts us in line with what the Senate bill is and how that's been amended. And so essentially part of the process and part of the rule change with this bill, in current statute, we have a portion that allows auctions and the sale of scrap metal vehicles to or damaged vehicles at auctions only to be sold to dealers, licensed dealers from the state of Minnesota. And this, because it's kind of a national licensure, eliminates the Minnesota portion, which it kind of snuck in a few years ago, and works to eliminate that. So.
Okay, Representative Swedzinski, before we further discussion, Representative Vogel, would you move the A2 amendment that's in front of us right now?
Please. Mr. Chair, I move the A2 amendment to be adopted.
The bill in the shape.
Yep.
Thank you. The motion is there. A2 is in front of us. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swedzinski, I know we've talked. I just want to confirm, have you heard any opposition to this amendment? Do you know of any concerns about this amendment?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Swedzinski,
Representative Morrow, no, this is not controversial. This is a simply kind of a cleanup of language, mostly. The folks that we've been visiting with are either neutral or positive on the bill. So,
follow up. Thank you. Because the chair is interested, and just others might be as well. I'm looking at the House File 2736, introduced by Representative Murdoch, our very own. The fiscal notice for Representative Joe Hoppe and you are on the agenda for today.
Yes.
Not that we're not glad to have you, but you can give us a brief description of the travels of this bill.
Yes. The travels of this bill?
Well, however you want to
describe. Hopefully heading to the general register, sir.
So, and you ended up with it?
Yes. Representative Murdoch and I visited about this issue, we decided to carry the bill forward.
All right. Thank you for your authorship and for bringing it to our attention. I guess that will have to suffice. Mr. Tennyson, you're our witness for the day to briefly describe what 2736 is intended to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me,
my name
Mr.
is
Chairman.
Tennyson,
hold it, Mr. Tennyson, just a moment. Who's asking for Representative Viskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe before the committee right now is the A2 amendment, not the bill itself, and I do have a question of staff on the A2 amendment.
Well, thank you for reminding the chair where we're at. Representative Biskins, if you'd like to ask Mr. Burris, I believe, a question.
To either the staff, does the amendment have the effect of changing the fiscal note at all?
Ms. Johnson, perhaps that's your question.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Biskins, since we just received this, that we don't I'd have to request an additional one or a revised one. So I don't have any impact to what this proposed amendment would do.
Follow up, Representative Biskins.
Well,
Chair has some thoughts.
I don't think I need any follow up,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I see that Mr. Tennyson would like to speak to the fiscal note implication after we adopt the A2 amendment. Then I'll come to Representative Morrow. Members, further discussion to the A2 amendment. before we adopt it and speak to the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, my point is to the A2 amendment, though.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the last sentence just says the commissioner must comply with. I don't even know what the statute is or what the commissioner's thoughts are. I didn't think about it until Representative Biskins mentioned the potential of a fiscal cost.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, if the commissioner has a representative in the room, we can at least find out from the commissioner's perspective what the A2 amendment does, whether
right.
it has a cost.
Thank you for the question. Members, we have the A2 amendment before us. We're on discussion of the A2 amendment. Mr. Tennyson, can you talk about the A2 amendment? You've heard some of the discussion. Perhaps you can explain that to us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Tennyson. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis, and I represent the company called Insurance Auto Auctions, Inc. We're a licensed salvage pool operator and so on. The amendment, before it was adopted in the Senate, I asked the department if there was any fiscal implication with the amendment, and they assured me there was not. So to that question, that's what the information I have. If you would like, I'd be happy to explain further the bill.
Let's deal with the A2 amendment at this moment. We got an explanation that the department said, and I'm looking into the audience for the department. Ms. McCormick, do you wish to testify in another direction about the fiscal note? And Ms. McCormick is approaching. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And I think what we're talking about is that there would be an amendment to the rule that would be a very minimal cost to the department. I talked to our rules coordinator today, and it would be a cost that we would be able to absorb.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate your questions for the witness. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. With that, members, unless there's further questions to the A2 amendment, let's adopt the amendment, put the bill into shape, and then we'll have the bill explained to us. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Nelson, do you want to hear the discussion first, or do you have questions?
I just want to ask a question. If this dealing with the rules, does this going to necessitate it going to the Governor Operations Committee? And I guess that's a question that you may should ask before we adopted the rule.
Well, let's hear the discussion about the bill, and we'll have staff check with the staff over at GovOps and see if this needs to go there. Good question, though. Thank you for it. Mr. Tennyson or Representative Swedzinski, if you'd like to explain why 2736 is important, why it's been in front of us today.
Mr. Chair, members, House File 2736 is simply an expansion of junk vehicle eligible buyers. Seeks to add a licensed scrap metal processor to the eligible list of people who can buy junk vehicles. And so as these processes go, it simply opens up that list of who can purchase these vehicles. And I'd like to have Mr. Tennyson speak to the rest of the bill. So,
thank you, Representative. Mr. Tennyson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as I was saying, I represent the Insurance Auto Auctions, and they're a licensed salvage pool operator. They acquire vehicles. They don't acquire. They take cars on consignment from insurance companies when the insurance company acquires a vehicle when it's junked out or when it's just totaled out. And what this we discovered about a year ago that there was a restriction in the regulations saying that the purchasers who are required to be licensed used parts dealers could only be licensed by Minnesota. That wasn't the practice, and it was brought to the department's attention. And the department supports the repeal of that rule or the elimination of that requirement. It expands the market for these vehicles and to other licensed used parts dealers. It also amends the statute to expand the eligible people to include, eligible buyers to include scrap metal processors who are also licensed. And the reason that's useful is I'll give you an example. And when the floods, the Katrina floods destroyed all those vehicles down south, our company is able to act as a take those cars on consignment and sell them for junk. The insurance industry did not want any part of those vehicles back in the market because they were contaminated. In Minnesota, I couldn't do that directly. We'd have to sell it to a licensed used parts dealer who would then sell it to a scrap metal process, a licensed scrap metal process. This eliminates that step. And it also would be beneficial for people who buy car insurance because theoretically it gets more money, obtains more money for resale than you would if you had a more limited set of buyers. And the insurance industry, insurance federation said they support the bill. The auto dealers have no opposition to it. They are okay with it. I've talked to everybody I can think of who has an interest in this thing, and I found no opposition to it. So it, what it does, it's a good business piece and it's a good consumer piece.
Thank you for your testimony and for explaining the bill and why it's here. Representative Nelson, do you have a further question? I think I had you next on the list. Good, thank you. Further questions for Mr. Tennyson or Representative Swedzinski? I think we understand the bill and are prepared to vote, but before we do, let me ask, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for, against, or about this bill? But seeing none, Representative Swedzinski, any last word here before we...
No, Mr. Chair, I thank you, and I'd appreciate a positive vote.
Okay. Now, before we vote, members, there is a motion that this bill, as amended, be referred to their general register. Representative Morrow asked a very cogent question about, or no, Representative Nelson did, about the rulemaking. Excuse me. And what'd you think? Let's, Representative Nelson, you ask a good question. The rulemaking in here is basically adding one small thing. It doesn't look like it's going to involve any local government, although rulemaking does come under that committee. I'm going to ask that we let the motion stand, and then I'll confer with the chair of that committee. And if she wants to see it, we'll do a motion on the floor. We'll have a couple of those opportunities this week, and we'll re-refer. Would that be sufficient?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's. I was just trying to point that out so yes. that we didn't trip this up later on. I do support the bill. It's. Mm-hmm. I see no problem with it. It's just that I noticed that, and we're all tired this morning from yesterday's floor session. So I just wanted to point that out so that later on this gets to final passage and somebody brings that up and delays the bill. So
thank you for lending your expertise to this because yes, the chairman is tired and is probably missing a lot of things. I appreciate that. Seeing no further discussion, as many as are in favor of the motion to refer to the general register as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative, you're on your way.
Thank you.
You are welcome. The next bill on the agenda is Representative Szymanski. And Representative Szymanski, we're going to send you to Ways and Means. Representative Szymanski, you can move your own bill and recommend it to pass and be referred to Ways and Means.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I recommend or move the passage of House File 2517, recommend it to pass and send to Ways and Means.
So the bill is before us. Members, I have two possible amendments in the packet. The A1 amendment was my amendment, and I'm not going to offer that one. Instead, members, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment to Representative Szymanski's bill. And this will complete a gentleman's agreement with the Senate author to put the bill in the shape that the chair wishes when it leaves this committee. Members, the wish of the chair in discussing this with the Senate author was that I didn't want to take this matter up. In fact, I'm more interested in discussion at some point about just one plate instead of two, but after having discussions with several people in law enforcement, I thought, okay, we'll just work with the two. But I wanted it to be a reasonable fine, hence the fine for having a broken front license plate is still a ticketable offense, still a primary offense you could be pulled over for. The fine will be $20. Staff actually pointed out to me that that's not really the problem that drives fines into the $180 range. It's the surcharges and fees that were imposed back whenever I was first elected and we were solving a budget deficit. So one of my passions in life is, since I've been here, is that we someday would start rolling those back. This is that day when we roll this very first one back. So the A2 amendment actually does make sure that the fine is indeed $20 and that all the surcharges that we applied 8 or 10 years ago do not apply to this particular offense. That's the A2 amendment. I would appreciate your approval. Questions to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is adopted with the A2 amendment. The motion's adopted. The bill is amended. Yes. We're now on the 2517 as amended. I see we've got testifiers. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And similar to the question I asked on the last bill, if we change the surcharges on that, does this necessitate that it goes to another committee like civil law and judiciary? I think because that's who uses the fines to fund judiciary. So, I mean,
exactly.
Is that a...
Well, let's ask the chair of the Judiciary Committee what he thinks about that. Representative Shemansky, welcome to the committee. If you'd like to speak to your bill now that this chair has amended it, and if you need to amend your motion, I'm happy to have it amended.
All right. Mr. Chairman.
And you're welcome to take a few moments to think about it, too, if you'd like. That's
okay. If you may give me just a... Well, I do realize that the amendment does change the fiscal note on this bill. Initially, as the bill was drafted, the fiscal note was about a $14,000 savings to the court. With the amendment attached, the fiscal note changes with general fund appropriation being reduced by the amount of the surcharges for the citations issued for this license plate violation. And my...
Okay. Thank you. Yes, we'll have this discussion a little further. First, let's hear about the bill and why it's even in front of us and why it seemed important. So if you'd like to introduce your testifiers and explain the bill, that would be
great. Let me just bump a couple of talking points here on the bill. It's something that's long overdue. The courts have looked at the subject of House File 2517 as the lack of display of the front license plate in appropriate position. Citations, approximately 9,300 citations are written annually for not having the front license plate displayed. About 25% of those citations are dismissed when taken to court because the statute isn't clear about what displaying the front license plate really means. And so about 25% of those cases are dismissed without fines or penalties. And between law enforcement and courts administration, they're asking for a clarification through this bill to simply make it clear to law enforcement what is a citable offense, and for the courts administration to administer it without tying up a lot of more court time. So with that, I would like to introduce our testifiers, Mr. Speaker.
That'd be Mr. Chairman, but thank you for the attempt.
Mr. Chairman.
And I have Mr. Franklin and Ms. Hang. Is that correct? Please introduce yourself for the recorded record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Jim Franklin. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Sheriff's Association. We appreciate the opportunity to be here. I will save any comments with regards to our law enforcement position on two plates versus one. We'll have that discussion another day, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. But we seek, from a law enforcement point of view, we seek clarification on this. As you know, when laws are passed, we try to implement those. The prosecutors attempt to guide us as to which cases go to trial, don't go, and then, of course, the judges have the responsibility to interpret that law. What we have here is some problems with regards to certain judges with different interpretations, and we, law enforcement, are really seeking clarification from the legislature. Tell us which way we can go on this one so that we can properly just simply go out and do our job. And as Representative Shemansky has already indicated, it's not only about the waste of time of the court, it's the waste of the time of the officer and the inconvenience to the public. Frankly, if we law enforcement are stopping somebody and it's really intended that we shouldn't, then we need to know that so that we can discontinue the practice of stopping. So we would just seek clarification here and guidance to help us do our jobs better and then eliminate those extra costs of time associated processing citations, going to court and other kinds of things, when in fact we could dispel that with this guidance from your body. So thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Franklin, for the testimony. Members, that are questions for Mr. Franklin at this moment? Seeing none, we'll hear from Ms. Hang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Ellen Hang. I'm a Minneapolis city attorney. I've been a prosecutor for the city of Minneapolis for about 15 years now. My office focuses on the misdemeanor and the petty misdemeanor offenses. So we would be the agency responsible for prosecuting these offenses if an offender wanted to come to court on this type of ticket. I would reiterate what Mr. Franklin said. I think the purpose of this bill is for clarification. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges that I see as a prosecutor on any law for any level of offense is a vagueness challenge. And I think we don't see many challenges on petty misdemeanors because most people who come to court on these are pro se. They represent themselves. They don't understand the legal workings and understand how to make motions. But if someone were to make a motion to void this law for vagueness, they very well could win because the purpose of having offenses are so that everyone, including the citizens, know what it is they are or are not supposed to do. And I think the way the law is currently written, it is unclear where that plate has to be affixed. And so aside from the time that we would spend in court prosecuting these offenses, that judges would spend, that the judicial staff would spend, that law enforcement would spend, I feel like one of my jobs as a prosecutor is sometimes to look out for the best interests of the people that come to court that aren't represented. And when someone comes to court on any level of offense, they're probably taking time out of their job, maybe having to find child care just so they can come and fight their ticket. And if the ticket's not validly issued or the law is vague, there's also issues for the citizen. This type of law, these petty offenses, are also very important to law enforcement and prosecutors in that oftentimes a simple stop for some form of petty violation is what leads to the more serious offenses. An officer sees someone speeding, pulls them over because they believe they violated this law, discovers they've been drinking. It might lead to taking a repeat DWI offender off the street. They often find weapons and drugs in cars. And so we want to make sure as prosecutors that the stop of that car that led to all the other charges I might bring is upheld by the court, because if the stop is found to be invalid, all of that evidence may be thrown out and we may have no case for the offense that we really want to prosecute. This bill is supported by not only many law enforcement associations, but by the judicial branch of Minnesota, the County Attorneys Association, Department of Public Safety, League of Minnesota Cities, the suburban prosecutors, as well as my office. So I think that just shows it is a very important clarification for the citizens, for law enforcement, as well as prosecutors and judges in the state.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, are there any questions for Ms. Hang or for Mr. Franklin? The chair just wants to be sure then that the language that I see on 2517 here, this is the clarity you're looking for that can remove the vagueness challenge, in your opinion?
Is this the same?
One plate, and I'm looking at lines 1.7 to 1.11 in particular.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right bill. Mr. Chair. It clarifies, Mr. Chair, it clarifies that one plate must be displayed at the front and one at the back, mounted either on the front or rear bumpers, or on the front and back of the vehicle exterior. It does clarify in the sense that it requires it on the bumper, which is most likely where the holder for a license plate is going to be. So I think it will make it more clear. What the situation we're trying to avoid is under the previous bill, it mentions it has to, the current law says it has to be displayed at the front. Well, if I have it in my front windshield, some can argue that's displaying it in the front of my car, and I think there are some judges that agree with that opinion. So the clarity we're trying to seek is the specific location on the car and make that much more certain so that an officer knows the windshield is not appropriate, but anywhere on the front bumper or where a license plate holder would be. So, yes, I do think that this adds that clarity.
Thank you for the clarification. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. And I don't even know if this has anything to do with the bill, but last year a constituent of mine sent me a video clip of a technology that they're using up in Canada where law enforcement drives through a parking lot and has a device where they can scan license plates while driving past, and that license plate goes into a database and they can check if there's any outstanding warrants, or they can drive by bars and check if the owner of that license plate has a previous DUI, things like that. Do we use that kind of technology in the state of Minnesota?
Franklin or Ms. Hang?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the type of technology has several components to it. Yes, that is technology that is available here in Minnesota, very limitedly. Not a lot of people use it. There is expenses involved, obviously. Secondly, it's primarily used for finding stolen vehicles that have been licensed, and their license plates have been entered into a stolen database. Generally, you have to go at multiple steps to find out who the owner is, and then to find out whether or not the owner has DWIs or the owner has warrants. Those are all additional steps. But with technology today, those steps are capable, but it's not an automatic, seamless process that's available to every law enforcement officer in the state in their squad car today.
No follow-up, Representative?
Well, just a thought. Maybe with a smoothly functioning MNLAR system, it would be a one-step process. Thank you.
That will be the whole technology thing will be a discussion period for another time. It's an amazing thing, the technology we have, but the civil libertarian side of me is just slightly troubled by this whole thing. But that's not about this bill. This is for another time. So I just want to be clear, though, that this clarifies the vagueness issue we're talking about, and that the $20 fine has nothing to do with unclarifying the vague, making it fuzzy again. In fact, I think the chair would assert that if people only had a $20 fine, they probably wouldn't even bother coming down. They'd probably just pay it. And my hunch is that $100-and-some surcharge probably drives more people to come down and take the day off and fight it than anything else. So I'm trying to help you out here. Thank you for bearing with me. Further discussion to the or further questions of these witnesses, discussion. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for, against, or about this bill? Before we go back to the chair of the Judiciary Committee. Seeing no one approaching, Representative Shemansky, Representative Morrow, did you want to ask the question or I'm going to ask it, one or the other? Go ahead.
Go right ahead.
Do you want to see this bill in Judiciary? I have a hunch that the fiscal note's going to balance out because of the loss of court costs because people aren't going to contest the deal, but there is the small matter of library fees, court fees, and what other fees we stacked on there probably not happening. But
okay.
Your call.
Mr. Chairman, I would trust your experience in this matter that if it goes to Ways and Means and they find difficulty with fiscal notes, that they would bounce it back to Judiciary.
That's right. We're sending this to Ways and Means, aren't we? Yes. Okay, we'll go to Ways and Means and we'll bounce it from there if we need to, if you're okay with that, Mr. Chairman. Further, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I read this and this elimination of this surcharge, this only applies to license plates, is not expanded to, I mean, the way it's written, it wouldn't expand all the any other tickets there. It's just the way
correct.
It's
correct. One small baby step is all I'm trying to take here. Okay. Yes, that's correct. Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say for the record, being a member of the Judiciary, I know that there's been expressed concern that the Judiciary Committee has an opportunity to do its own work and for that work not to just go forward to Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to make sure that I echo those comments for our wonderful chair so that the chair could potentially take into consideration these words as a way of saying that I think is it might be prudent for us to go for it to go back to Judiciary so that we can do our work so that we feel like we are taking care of our responsibility.
And, Mr. Chairman, I believe this bill is general register. What do they call it in the Senate? General orders.
General orders.
So we've got deadlines accomplished there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Further comments, members? Representative Shemansky, do you want to amend your motion? You want to like stay at Ways and Means?
Mr. Chairman, I'll amend my motion to...
go ahead and make that motion again, and we'll move this bill along.
House file 2517 be recommended to pass and sent to the House Judiciary Committee.
As amended.
As amended.
Good. That's the motion, members. Further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and you're on your way to your committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, for your attention to this matter and your support. It's appreciated. Representative Biskins. Members, now the next two bills we've heard and had discussion on and laid over. However, it seems prudent because of some closing and opening dates that this bill in particular needs to move. And Mr. Biskins, I'm looking for the effective date on this. Is this probably right after enactment?
Yes.
Representative Biskins, you want to move this to the general register that. This will go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1175 be recommended pass and place on the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Viskins, for the motion. The bill is before us. Members, are there any questions for what should be just a routine motion? Yeah. Representative Viskins, you want to comment on it?
Well, I do, members, and I'd ask for your support. Members, this bill is before us at the request of the chairman of this committee, and while you all know him as a genial and very fair man, you may not know that he also has a wicked sense of humor. And as I ponder why he asks that this bill be before the committee, I have a sneaking suspicion that his sense of humor may be in play, and this may become a vehicle for a whomping deputy register fee increase as his parting gift to his Scott County colleague in the House. But members, you know, at the risk of being truly embarrassed by carrying a fee increase, I ask that you play along with the chair as we go forward here. Let's move it down the next step and see what becomes of it. So I ask for your support.
Yes, members, he's on to me. Thank you, Representative Essence, for your desperate attempt at humor. It's appreciated. Does anybody in the audience need to come down and try to top that, speak about the bill one way or the other? Seeing no one, but Representative Morrow, would you like to speak about the bill?
Just a very quick question, and we may have covered it. Representative Biskins, the only question I have is that line 1.13, we say where the office is going to be opened, and I've heard you in the past talk about the federal law might change, the X or Y might change. What if in the future they want to move from the library to another building? Will they need a statutory change to do that?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the staff can correct me on this, but I believe there probably would be, although this would go into session law and not statute, there still would probably have to be legislative change. But unlike the state of Minnesota, when we build sports arenas, typically when we build brand new libraries, they last a little longer than 20 years before we're back asking the taxpayers to build a new library.
Mr. Burris, I believe that the Department of Public Vehicle Services or Public Safety actually owns these, and they actually issue them according to set procedure, and we do have the right as a legislature to actually tell them where they're going to be located, but we do need to have that place named. This just can't be picked up and moved without coming back to the legislature. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, I would need to look into that a little bit further. There are administrative rules that govern the placement and establishment of deputy registrar offices. Mm-hmm. And
we do have the expert in the audience if we'd like to ask her to come and explain that. So I suppose we could do that. Mr. Morrow?
Mr. Chair, I didn't want to open a can of worms. I just wondered whether you needed to say the specific spot you're opening it.
I believe that is indeed the case. So Ms. McCormick is going to come and help us out of the weeds on this one.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with DVS. The rules allow for a change in location, and so I think even though that it would be done through legislation, I'm not positive, but I'm fairly certain that we have made a change without coming back to the legislature. For instance, with Eden Prairie closing and Hennepin County, that was done through legislation, and we didn't come back to the legislature when they decided they were going to close that office. So I don't think that we have to. I think we have the mechanism where we can take care of it at our level through the rules we have to operate.
Thank you for your clarification. I appreciate that. Further questions or comments? Anyone else in the audience want to talk about this? Seeing none, Representative Biskins, thank you for being useful for my purposes here. If you'd like to renew your motion, we'll pass this to the General Register.
I renew my motion that House File 1175 be recommended to pass with suspicion and placed on the General Register.
All in favor signify by aye. 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 Opposed? The motion prevails. We're on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Biskins. Members, tongue firmly in cheek, just for the record. And now the chair would like to move House File 2428. We also laid this one over for inclusion in our omnibus bill number 2, but it seems important that we put this one to Ways and Means. It has to go to Ways and Means first. Now, if you'll just pardon me for a moment while I ask staff why I have two amendments in here. Okay. It's okay. The amendments you may have, I have them in my packet. Members, we adopted these when we heard the bill before. So 2428 actually is amended with the DE1 amendment and the A1 amendment. If you'll recall that, that's the bill in front of us. Is there further questions or discussion, or can we just vote to move this to Ways and Means? Let's just do that. Thank you, members. I think we're fully informed. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2428 is amended. Is to Ways and Means. Now, members, on the agenda, next we have, when I find my agenda, thank you. We're down to some informational hearings. We have three quick things we need to hear about. We have the governor recommended a supplemental budget, members, and there were two things he wanted us to look at in, that come under the purview of this committee. One is soft body armor reimbursement program, and the other is commercial truck weight registration process. So at this time, I'd like to call, who am I calling forward? Someone to come up from DPS and talk about soft body armor. Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself to the committee and talk about the supplemental request, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For information, Mark Danassi, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. I want to thank the Chair and the members for allowing us the opportunity to come before you today and talk about the Governor's supplemental request for reimbursement fund for soft body armor. As many of you may have heard the term bulletproof vest, most of these vests actually aren't bulletproof. You'll hear that term out there quite a bit, but they're really not bulletproof. But they are do provide significant protection to the wearer against common small and medium firearm rounds and some other types of weapons. We often, in the Minnesota statute, refer to these vests as soft body armor. As a matter of fact, with the Chair's indulgence.
Commissioner Danassi, yes, please.
I'm going to pass around an older piece of soft body armor for you to take a look at. Soft body armor is designed to stop a bullet when penetrating and causing harm to the wearer. They're actually made of panels that are held together in kind of a cloth vest, as you see. The panels are constructed of many layers of incredibly strong fibers. Typically, they're made out of DuPont Kevlar, which, when hit by a bullet, act as kind of a net that essentially catches the bullet, preventing from traveling any further into the human body. Each layer kind of twists as it passes through, creating a stronger bearing and slowing the bullet until it comes to a complete stop. This process actually deforms the bullet, flattening it to a disc shape, and the force of the impact then is spread over the entire panel rather than taking a singular impact in one specific spot. And although the vest will stop the penetration of the bullet, the wearer itself actually does absorb the bullet's energy. So it isn't that there isn't going to be some impact associated with it. In fact, the impact is typically strong enough that the wearer may suffer from blunt force trauma at the point of impact that's there. You've probably heard or read someplace that an individual being shot and being hit in a soft body armor will literally be knocked off their feet, thrown to the ground, and may actually be knocked unconscious. And while that blunt force trauma is incredibly uncomfortable and painful, it typically isn't life-threatening. As a matter of fact, the vest that you have passed around here today has kind of an interesting history to it. It expired in 1990. It was a replacement vest from that company to a Trooper John Mock, who is now still with the Minnesota State Patrol. Some of you may remember him as the captain down here in charge of Capitol Security. In 1983, Trooper Mock was standing outside his vehicle at a crash on Highway 12 when a motor vehicle came and struck him as he was standing alongside the roadway. He was thrown from front of that vehicle completely over the top of it and landed on the hood and the windshield of the subsequent vehicle behind it. He suffered significant trauma to his lower torso, to his head, and other portions of his body. But the upper portion of his body, he didn't suffer many significant internal injuries. As such, DuPont Kevlar actually listed him on their list of saves. He's listed in their list of saves as being saved by the vest, and the Point Blank actually issued that vest to him free of charge as a replacement for the vest that saved his life out on the highway that day. Because of the safety effectiveness of soft body armor, today many law enforcement officers in Minnesota wear them, and they are in fact mandated wear equipment by many other law enforcement organizations. The soft body armor vest reimbursement program was established in Minnesota Statute 299A.38 in 1989. It served to offset law enforcement officers and law enforcement organizations for a portion of the purchase of soft body armor vests. The Commissioner of Public Safety was designated as a point of application for this reimbursement process and given the fiduciary responsibility for the established reimbursement fund. In 2005, the legislature established that $508,000 be allocated annually to the reimbursement fund. That amount has remained constant each fiscal year since. Since its inception, statutory language has limited the amount of reimbursement per individual. In that 2005 language change, the allowable reimbursement was amended to the lesser of $600 or 50% of the actual price of the soft body armor. Additionally, the 2005 change added language instructing the commissioner to adjust that $600 threshold by the annual percentage change in the consumer price index. Based on that escalator, the maximum reimbursement amount has climbed from $600 in 2005 to $696.92 in 2011. While the inflation escalator was added to the maximum amount of reimbursement in 2005, there have been no increases in the dedicated fund. Just for a comparison, if the similar consumer price index information and escalator were used, the dedicated fund would have grown incrementally from $508,000 in 2005 to approximately $663,000 in 2011. In recent years, the fund has been completely expended prior to the end of the fiscal year. Qualified reimbursements have been delayed until the fund was reallocated in subsequent fiscal years, only to be expended prior to completion of that year. This fiscal year, the fund was depleted after only 4 months. The fund ran out of money in the middle of October. As of March 20th, 2012, yesterday, the Department of Public Safety is holding 777 backlog soft body armor requests, armor reimbursement requests. With the anticipated requests for the remainder of this fiscal year, it's estimated that a one-time appropriation of $515,000 is needed to bring the account to balance for the beginning of the next fiscal year.
Thank you, Commissioner Donaski. Members, are there questions for the Commissioner on this? And members, I should point out that Representative Kath has introduced the, you have it in your packet, House File 2924. This is what we're having the informational hearing on now. I think it's basically the first six sections of this bill deal with public safety and with transportation, which fall under our jurisdiction. The last couple pages do not. But you'll notice on page two of the bill, the $515,000 supplemental appropriation that they're seeking. Further questions? Mr. Donaski, welcome, or thank you for your testimony, your comments. The next thing we have is the commercial truck weight registration process. MnDOT wants to talk to us about that. Mr. Boudin, who are you bringing? Mr. Halverson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Eric Burdine. Thank you. Eric Burdine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And, Mr. Chair, this effort actually began last year in the Senate by Senator DeCrife, who came up with a way to allow trucks that haul overweight loads to hopefully have a little bit easier time. Currently, the truck has to come to MnDOT to receive an overweight permit. Then they also have to go to the Department of Public Safety to re-register their truck at a higher weight. And then if it's a single trip permit, they're allowed to go back again to the Department of Public Safety to re-register at a lower weight and get a refund. So it's really three stops for one activity that they're trying to do. And so in response to Senator DeKreif's efforts last year, we worked with the Department of Public Safety over the interim to come up with a very similar thing to what he was trying to do, where if a trucker comes to MnDOT to get an overweight permit, they would be allowed to pay a surcharge, and then that would be in lieu of having to re-register at the higher weight at the Department of Public Safety. So this would reduce the time and cost of this process for both truckers and the agencies. I should also mention that it would be completely optional. If somebody wanted to continue doing business the way they do it today, they would be allowed to continue doing that. But this would be one option for them to hopefully save some time. And, Mr. Chair, that's it. I do have folks from DPS and from MnDOT's Office of Motor Carrier Services here if there are any questions.
Thank you for the explanation, Mr. Rudin. Mr. Halverson, welcome to the committee. Do you want to comment on anything, or are you just here to stand for questions?
Mr. Chairman, just here to answer questions. Okay. I would point out that the surcharge would be equal to the amount that you would have to pay to re-register, so it's not an increase fee.
Not an increase or a decrease to the department. It's just one stop instead of three. What's not to like about that, Mr. Halverson? Thank you for helping make that possible. Ma'am, would you, just for the record, just identify yourself just so we know you were here.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I am Marge Knoll with Department of Public Safety, Driver and Vehicle Services.
And I know you told me that about 15 minutes ago, and I promptly forgot. I apologize. So, Ms. Knoll, thank you for being here to stand for questions, or do you have testimony you'd like to give before we stand for questions?
I'm here for questions.
You're a resource for us. Thank you. Members, are there questions about this initiative and about this and the supplemental budget? The chair has a question for either any of you. I like the initiative. I like the streamlining. Thank you for doing this. Is there a House file that's following this at the moment? Is there a way this can be put into policy this year, or does this have to be a fiscal bill? Mr. Radin, perhaps you can speak to that. If the money is going to be an even wash, can we just make this a policy change? What's your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, we believe there would be a small fiscal impact. Okay. It wouldn't be significant. I don't think it's necessarily something that would have to go into a finance bill. The Senate is carrying Senator DeKreif's initiative from last year in their first omnibus transportation policy bill. So there's a very similar provision already moving in that bill.
Good. Thank you. Well, members, I want us to pay attention to it here in case this comes up in a conference committee. I want us to be comfortable with perhaps adopting that if that's necessary. So if you have questions about it now, now's the time to pepper them with questions and make sure we fully understand the application, because it just strikes me as good business. Representative Benson.
It does. In fact, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish there were more things that we could do exactly the way you're doing this, but can you explain why, if you know, the charges won't change, how there could be a fiscal impact? Is it rulemaking? What's
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, we think that there'll be a slight charge or a slight expenditure for programming our computer system.
Follow up.
Benson, follow up.
Is that something that you could absorb, or, I mean, we're talking lots of money, or?
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a lot of money. We're thinking $30,000 to $50,000. Mm. We have to send it out to our programmer that's in Colorado.
Okay. Representative Benson, follow up.
No, okay.
Members, any other questions? Thank you, folks, for making us aware of this and helping us understand the issue. We appreciate it very much, and thanks for your service to the state. Mr. Rudin, we're going to do the presentation on the highway, the 2012 February forecast. Who's going to set that up for us?
Mr. Chair, that'll be Tracy Hatch. She's MnDOT's chief financial officer. And you should have a packet of information. There's also a copy of her PowerPoint slides that she'll be going through that will be coming around here shortly.
Great. Thank you. Members, while Ron is passing out the PowerPoints, let's welcome Ms. Hatch to the committee. And Hatch, if you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tracy Hatch. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to present to you today our transportation forecast for February 2012. As you know, MnDOT currently forecasts 6 transportation funds. And before I get into that detail, I just want to point out to you the documents that you have before you. Again, you should have our PowerPoint, which I believe is coming around. The other thing that I want to point out to you is we have kind of a new approach that we're kind of taking this forecast, and we hope that it's helpful to you as well as to many other audiences that are interested in our forecast information. And we have received some good feedback, so we'll be making a few changes to it, putting a little bit more detail into it as your staff have requested. But you'll see before you this document, which is our sort of the comprehensive actual forecast, and then the snapshot information is in the PowerPoint. But this is a little bit more comprehensive document than what we've done in the past. It talks a little bit more about each of the funds, the flow of dollars between the funds and out to the program areas. So you'll see that. There's also another kind of 3 slides that are attached or in your packets as well. This was information that we had typically provided in the past via the PowerPoint presentation, and we heard from your staff, Mr. Chair, that they would like this information as well. So we have provided this to them, and we will incorporate this as well as their additional comments into the next forecast document that comes out. We really want it to be comprehensive and available and meeting all of their needs. So as I mentioned, we forecast 6 transportation funds. They are the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the HUTD. That fund is made up primarily of 3 revenue sources. That is the gas tax, the registration tax, also called tab fees, and the motor vehicle sales tax, which we affectionately refer to as MBEST. We also forecast the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund, as well as the State Airports Fund and the Transit Assistance Fund. You'll notice that there's overall there's very little change compared to our forecast for November. A couple of changes that did occur is the revenue for HUTD overall is up about 1.2%, And therefore, there you'll see slight increases in the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund as a result. So moving on to the HUTD, which is our kind of the biggest fund that we have. This fund receives funding from the three constitutionally dedicated sources I mentioned just a moment ago. As you know, the Constitution requires that at least 60%, or excuse me, at least 40% is dedicated to transit, and currently that is the current rate, 40% for transit, and 60% of the MVEST revenue is dedicated to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The current split of the dollars within the fund is approximately 50% of the total fund comes from gas tax, about 33% of the total fund comes from registration tax, about 16% of the total fund comes from the motor vehicle sales tax, and then 1% comes from other sources, and the primary source there is investment income.
Ms. Hatch, if you'd pause for a moment. Representative Benson, is this a good time for your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's being answered. My question is being answered as we proceed, so I apologize.
Sorry, I was doing three things at once.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, actually, I think my question was answered as we moved through it, so I apologize. I should have just given her more time.
No apology necessary. Time usually does answer a lot of these questions. Ms. Hatcher, you're doing a fine job. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my pleasure. The next slide shows sort of in graphic form the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and the flow of dollars from into that fund and then out of that fund. And again, at the top, you'll see our three constitutionally dedicated sources of revenue. You'll see the set-aside that's off to the right is kind of comes off the top, 5% comes off the top, and that is actually transferred into the County State Aid Highway Fund. 46.5% of that 5% is for Township Roads and Bridges. 53.5% of the 5% set-aside is for the Flexible Highway Account, and currently that goes to turnbacks. The remaining 95% of the fund flows, as you see on your chart, to the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund. The next charts will kind of break down, show first the HUTD fund in total, and then break down the three revenue sources for the HUTD. You'll see, I would caution to pay attention to the scale on the left. Sometimes in order to show a difference, we have to make the scale such that it might over-dramatize what the difference is. Essentially, there's very, very little difference from the last forecast. Modest increases in all 4 years, as you'll see here. And this is, again, 2012 through 2015. We forecast the first 2 years of the biennium and then the planning years of the following biennium. So as we talk about gas tax, just to remind you, I'm sure you all are aware that we currently have a gas tax rate that is comprised of 25 cents per gallon of actual gas tax and 3 cents, which is a debt service surcharge. We have the final half cent of the debt service surcharge that will be implemented July 1 this coming year, and that is a result of the Chapter 152 from 2008 that provided that additional revenue to the fund. The surcharge, as a reminder, is expected to cover the debt obligations for the capital projects that were approved out of Chapter 152, the bulk of those being bridge bonding projects. Again, showing here the changes in the gas tax. Essentially, gas tax is somewhat flat in 2012 and down a bit in 2013. You'll also see it's down approximately 1.5% in each of the years 14 and 15. We do watch this. We realize there's a little bit of concern about gas taxes increasing, or excuse me, the gas prices increasing and the effect that might have on our gas tax revenue. We have not at this time accounted for an increase in the overall price of gas in our forecast. We would certainly adjust that in November if that proved to be a problem. I can tell you that in 2008, when prices kind of skyrocketed, we did see a marked decrease in overall gas tax receipts.
Ms. Hatch, can you pause for just a moment for Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Hatch. I recognize that, again, this is a distortion, perhaps, of what's going on, but I think you touched on part of my question. As gas prices creep up, the collections go down. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just going to make an observation to you. You and I are going to be on this alternative financing task force, and I think this is a demonstration in part of one of the reasons that this is imperative, that we look at other mechanisms and other alternatives for funding roads and bridges, members, because this is not a good sign given the gap between the work we have to do and the funding that we have available.
Thank you for your comment there, Stu. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Leidiger.
Well, my question was really along the same lines. I wanted to pause on this because this shows, as prices increase, the actual revenue that comes into us does in fact decrease. And I guess the question is this what we saw in 2008? Was it the same ratio of decrease based on the price increase?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this chart is essentially what our forecast is for the gas tax based on a number of factors, including the CAFE standards, consumer trends toward more fuel-efficient vehicles, that kind of thing. This does not currently demonstrate or does not have built into this forecast what an increase in gas overall gas prices might do to our forecast. So it would have, you're correct, a dramatic effect, we think, if gas prices do reach, the rumor is $5 a gallon. And we did see that in 2008.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Or even $5 or even $6, you're hearing that. And then Representative Morrow's comment of, if it really does, in fact, go down substantially, which I guess could happen if all things, all other things being equal, we have a problem.
And we'll be chatting about that this summer on the task force. Mm-hmm. Ms. Hatch, just an observation. The slides you're giving us here and information, I'm perceiving that a lot of the detail is in this packet. And some members, if you like a little light reading on the way home tonight, this you can drill down in here, and there's some fascinating background information in this document. Of course, I will be reading it if you're riding the bus, taking the train, or somebody else is driving, just to be clear.
And those trains are really good.
They are. That's what I hear. Representative Szymanski, I think you want to.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on the subject of rising gas prices and declining revenues, and I may be stepping out into left field here, but just calculating the present tax rate on gasoline, mm-hmm. and the current price of gasoline and our current sales tax rate, has anyone ever looked at the possibility of applying a percentage gas tax as opposed to a fixed rate per gallon?
Mr. Manson, before I ask anybody to answer that, I would encourage you to Google the state of Maryland and the discussion they're having right now about applying their sales tax on top of their per gallon tax.
Oh, heaven forbid we do that.
Well, you asked, I'm telling you, Google that and read all about it. You don't have to answer that, Ms. Hatch, but you're free to comment if you wish, and if you'd like to get back with your presentation, feel free.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I will just make two other comments kind of unrelated to your comment, Representative, and that is just another reminder that the gas tax does represent 50% of the revenue to the overall fund, and that the fund does feed into not just the Trunk Highway Fund, but the County State Aid Highway Fund and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund as well. And then one other comment, if you don't mind, to your comment about the forecast document. We know that there's a lot of detail that goes into not just these forecasts, but what the makeup of the funds. And that, thank you, that is exactly the purpose for kind of putting all of that together in one location. So as things come up and as you might need a reminder and or other people are unfamiliar to the process can kind of get that information. I just do also want to mention that the gas tax forecast is compiled kind of using three sources. One is GII, which is the global economic macroeconomic forecaster for the state of Minnesota, as well as many other states and municipalities and countries around the world. And that is also the primary source for the general fund forecast. We also use the Energy Information Administration, which is the federal administration, and we use their regional information. And then we take a look at it and their historical accuracy compared to actuals that have come in and make that adjustment. So moving on to registration taxes, you'll see here, it's a little bit of a different story, both here and in MVEST compared to the gas tax. We have slightly higher forecasted revenues in the registration tax forecast. This also is based on GII's national new car sales projection for fiscal 12, which has increased. This also, the primary, just to kind of give you a breakdown, about 80% of the revenues come from passenger vehicles, and about 20% come from other vehicles, primarily trucks.
Thank you.
You'll see the motor vehicle sales tax forecast here is much the same as the previous. It has a little bit of an uptick as we look out across the four-year period, but modest. across the biennium, we expect there to be about a $32 million increase overall, which is about a 4.8% increase for the four-year period. And again, this forecast is actually prepared by MMB, and they give it to us, and we use that to complete the HUTD forecast overall. But it is based also on GII's forecast for all motor vehicles, so new and used vehicles.
Ms. Hatch, this on this slide, what we're looking at in 2012, now that's 100% of it going in to transportation purposes, not correct?
60% of the total receipts in MBES do go to transport. Well, all of it goes to transportation purposes. 60% go into the HUTD for highway transportation, and then the other 40% goes into the Transit Assistance Fund.
This number we're looking at here, I'm looking at the blue column in 2012, says 336. Mm-hmm. Is that the total number going into transportation, or is that the 60% for the highway user fund?
Mr. Chair, that's the 60% going into the highway user transportation.
Thank you for clarifying. I appreciate that.
You'll see, I'll point that out as we get to the later in the presentation, you'll see the other 40% show up as well.
Thank you.
So moving on again to another large fund for us, that's the Trunk Highway Fund. You'll see some modest changes in the Trunk Highway Fund overall, but they really stem from four sources. The first is a slight bit of revenue increase, and again, that's because the HUTD overall is up slightly. You'll see also that there was a reduction in other income of $21 million each year, as well as corresponding expenditures, so a net zero effect on the fund overall. And that's primarily due to shared construction projects, where the locals will pay us to do a construction project, and we would record that both as a receipt as well as an expenditure. There was also an $18.5 million correction that we needed to make to the fund to make sure that the fund lined up with law and statute, which is always a primary concern of ours. And there was an error that occurred in the November forecast where there was a shift of federal funds and then at that time a corresponding reduction in the expenditures, which should not have occurred. The expenditures should have remained the same. And then again, investment income, which is based on projections that we receive from MMB across all of the funds, have been reduced. This shows in a numbers table format. If you're more of a numbers person, the effects of the four items I just mentioned. So, again, the state revenues from the HUTD, the interest income, and then where you see shared construction receipts, you'll notice it's in the revenue as a decrease, as well as in the expenditure as a decrease, and the net effect, again, is zero. This is one of the more popular slides, I think, for many folks, and so we have included it here in the presentation. It is not in the forecast document, but it is in the supplemental attachment that we provided. The reason that we didn't initially include this is because, as you see, this is the debt service transfer projections, and again, this is just the transfer. Now, I have to clarify, our debt service is actually made up of three components. This is only one of those components. It's the largest, but it's the transfer from the Trunk Highway Fund to cover Trunk Highway debt service on Trunk Highway bonds. We also have local government advances, and we have the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund, much smaller comparatively, but we do have those pieces of debt as well. So this, again, is just the Trunk Highway Fund transfer to cover our debt service on the Trunk Highway bonds. And as you'll see, the green line represents the forecast from end of session, so last summer. We expected it to be much higher. Our November forecast is illustrated in the blue line, which you can hardly see because it's sort of hidden by the current forecast, the red line. And so essentially there was very little change other than some interest reduction in the forecast between November and February. One additional thing I'll note about this slide that you've probably not seen before and that I want to just be sure to point out is we are projecting now and demonstrating 6 years worth of debt service and our debt capacity, which is also something I'll point out here in another minute. Typically, we do 4 years. Again, forecasts are always the current biennium and then the next biennium. And we heard from your staff that it would really be helpful to have more years if possible. And so we consulted with MMB and sort of in conjunction with their 16A, I believe is the statute that kind of governs the debt capacity forecast for the general fund, we agreed and decided to kind of be in line with that to give you a little bit more information. So you'll see an additional 2 years projected here, which is just the red line, and that's because we didn't project those previously. And I have to caveat that by saying when we say we didn't project those previously, they weren't projected in public, but we do obviously track very closely our our debt service and our expenditures and things like that to make sure that we're in compliance and making good use of the dollars.
Which segues us to the debt management policy.
Exactly. Mr. Chair, you'll notice this slide also has two additional years, the year 16 and 17. There's a very similar chart in your packet, and that packet in the slide in your packet only goes to the 4 years. So again, that is in the supplemental information that you received. I believe it's on the last page of that supplemental handout that you received, and would coincide with this slide. We also, on this slide, again, it's in the supplemental handout, but not in the actual forecast document. We inserted another column, the total debt service. We thought it might be helpful for you and your staff to see what are we currently paying, where does that line us up against our debt management policy, and then what might be the remaining debt service we would be able to handle to get us up to that debt policy. And again, the policy is a limit. We the closer we get to that limit, the more kind of uncomfortable we might be, but that's certainly a policy decision for you.
And that is 20% of the Trunk Highway Fund or the HUTDF?
Mr. Chair, that's 20% of the annual state revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund.
Okay,
so it does not include the federal revenues. It's only the state revenues portion.
Thank you for the clarification.
This is a chart that you'll see in the forecast document, and this just again captures year by year what the dollar change and the percent change to the fund for each of those 4 years. And again, more detail as well as that chart and all the corresponding charts are in the larger forecast document. So moving on to the CASA and MSAS funds, this is the County State Aid Highway Fund and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund. State revenues from HUTD, again, in this fund is, as you would expect, slightly higher for the four-year period of about 1.3%. And again, that's due to the HUTD overall being up a little bit. We have interest income down in both of the funds. We also have motor vehicle lease sales tax, which applies just to the County State Aid Highway Fund in this case. 50% of the additional revenues from the motor vehicle lease sales tax go into this fund and 50% into the transit assistance fund. And that forecast we expect to affect the County State Aid Highway Fund to the tune of about $500,000. And again, that forecast we received, the lease sales tax forecast we received from the Department of Revenue. For the airports fund, we have, as you know, four main sources of revenue to the State Airports Fund, and that is the air flight property tax, the aircraft registration tax, the fuel tax, and then a little bit of interest income. And so in this fund, we saw only a slight change, and the slight change was based on both investment income being lower in this fund, as we've seen in all of the corresponding funds. And we also certified a total of $8 million for fiscal 12 through 14. For air flight property tax, and so that was an increase to the fund of $200,000 per year. If you noticed, the previous forecast actually showed a significant negative in the fund overall. This again is the kind of graphical chart to kind of give you the breakdown year by year of the impact to the State Airports Fund from this forecast.
And Ms. Hatch, the 2013, that reflects the bankruptcy payment that has been pending for a while?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. That is correct.
Thank you.
So moving on to this Transit Assistance Fund. Again, this fund receives currently 40% of the MVES revenues directly into the fund. Of that 40%, 10% goes to the Greater Minnesota Transit, and the remaining 90% goes to the Met Council for metro area transit. We also receive, as I mentioned a few moments ago, 50% of the portion of the motor vehicle lease sales tax goes to this fund for Greater Minnesota Transit. This next slide we decided to break out for you. Instead of showing you the whole fund, we thought we would show you the effect of the forecast for Greater Minnesota Transit and then also the effect for the metro area. So this first slide shows just the Greater Minnesota Transit revenue changes from this forecast. And the following slide shows the Metropolitan Council portion of the fund. I will also note that the Greater Minnesota Transit does also receive some general fund dollars as well.
Sat, you don't know how that warms the chairman's heart to see that. Thank you for sharing this slide.
And the chairman does have a heart, I should point out. Thank you. Members, questions for Ms. Hatch or Mr. Rudink on this quick overview? I assume that concludes your presentation. Thank you for a well-laid-out presentation and for walking us through it, particularly for the supporting documentation behind that. Members, anything else to come before the committee? I just have a little housekeeping here. Ms. Hatch, Mr. Rudink, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Metro Transit Governance Informational Hearing. Say that fast on 3 hours of sleep. Members, we get together Monday in the room above us here. That is the agenda for that day, so we can come and we'll have a discussion about the committee's work or the chair's work with others on a starting point to talk about governance of transit in the metropolitan area. We'll tee that bill up, we'll talk about it, and then we'll just lay it over. There won't be any action taken on Monday, at least at this time. If there is, I'll notify you via email if we need to move some other bills quickly. But I think our business is pretty much wrapping up for the year. Thank you for your membership on this committee, for your attention to these matters. And seeing nothing else, with that, members, we're adjourned.